Hi, Lisa Rosen.
Hi, Chris Plentis.
So I want to talk about what you're up to now as an independent diabetes educator, but I thought we would just start with a little bit of background on who you are, maybe like where you grew up, what you went to school for, how you got into nursing in general in the healthcare field. Give people who don't know you a little background.
Okay. I grew up in this area, which is Montgomery County, and
where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school at Germantown Academy. Mm-hmm. I went to college at Tufts the first time around and studied child development. I was very interested in working with children, but wasn't sure exactly what capacity that I wanted to work with children in. So when I graduated, I looked to work in a hospital. I was really interested in health and children, but I ended up working in a preschool and decided that I wasn't going to let 8th grade science or 9th grade or high school science determine whether or not I liked science, and I decided to go back to school, learn more about science and health and the body. So I went back to nursing school and got a second bachelor's degree.
How soon, what was that timeline when you decided to do that?
I think I was the first time I went to college, I was out of college for 2 or 3 years when I decided that I wanted to go back to school. And because nursing is an undergraduate degree, I had to kind of do school all over again.
And what was the goal? Was you realized you wanted to be a nurse?
Yes, I realized that if I wanted to work with children in the capacity that I wanted to, that I wanted to be a nurse and wanted to help, sick people get better and also help prevent sickness.
So you went back to school. Where was that?
University of Pennsylvania.
And you graduated. Where did you start working?
I started working at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I was a bedside nurse there for about 12 years. And I was very lucky. I actually had always wanted to work in oncology, but I wasn't given that assignment. So when we talk about like how our paths were created, mine was completely random. There were 3 nurses that wanted oncology, and 2 of them got it, and I wasn't the one that got it. So somebody said, oh, go to this floor. It's the oncology overflow floor. So that's where I did my my practice nurse when I was still in school. And, if you did well, they hired you. And I ended up falling in love with that floor. And the best thing about it, it was the endocrine and GI floor. And the best thing about it was that we spent so much of our time teaching. Someone once said to me, as a nurse, you can sit and just pass out meds all day long, but if you have the opportunity to actually explain things to people and talk to them and interact with them in a different way, it becomes much more meaningful. So even from my early nursing career, I was really interested in education and helping people understand what was going on in their body. And in this case, it was children. So it was not only becoming skilled at explaining things to a 5-year-old, breaking it down in that sort of language, but then also being able to shift and explain it to their parents as well. Mm-hmm. And then dealing with the emotional piece of children being hospitalized. And so there's just a lot of, I think, skills that I was able to learn from those 12, 13 years of doing bedside nursing on a floor where so much of our job was teaching. Mm-hmm.
12, 13 years there. Where did you go after that?
So that was the longest place that I ever stayed. And then after that, I was very interested in learning about the patient care experience from different lenses. So that was the acute, I'm in the hospital, it's a short period of time, I'm really sick. experience. So there's your acute experience. Next, I went to home care. So that's okay. Now I have diabetes. How am I living with it through the other days of the year? So I went to school with a little boy who had an insulin pump and an insulin continuous glucose monitor. And I basically just was his nurse all day long. So I got really a lot of experience on what it was like to actually live with diabetes from, you know, his perspective and his parents' perspective. So I had a couple of other patients when I did home care that were on insulin pumps. So I had more experience with the technology that we didn't really see in the hospital where we were doing mostly injections. So I did that for a little while. Then I worked for an insurance company and did case management. So that was really interesting to see the insurance side of the healthcare experience. How do I, you know, I get denied a medication? How do I, or I get denied services for nursing? How do I navigate that through the insurance company? So that gave me a ton of knowledge about the patient care experience. Next, I went to private, a healthcare solution company, a private business that was trying to help people with diabetes navigate managing their blood sugars. And I was a health, that was the first time I got into health coaching specifically. And I really liked the combination of health education and then health coaching. Which is really a nuanced part of nursing, but it was really nice to be able to spend a lot of time in the coaching space where you're helping someone, not only telling them what they need to do, but helping them get there. And that's really the biggest difference between, you know, being in the healthcare field and being, you know, your doctor tells you what you need to do, lose weight, manage your blood sugars, but the health coach helps you get there. They help you in the in-between, and they give you the steps and they help you feel empowered to get there. So that's really where I learned about health coaching. And that's where I got the hours to be able to sit for the exam for me to become a certified diabetes care and education specialist, which is a credential that I worked really hard for and just basically gives me that sort of expert knowledge and experience in diabetes care. So that was there. And then for the past year, I spent doing adult health education teaching in a hospital. So I was a diabetes coordinator in a hospital. So that was a great experience because I learned much more about the comorbidities that adults have who have diabetes that children don't have. So a lot about the kidneys and the heart and circulation and spent a lot of time trying to help people who were already having complications of diabetes navigate how to manage their diabetes. So that's what brought me to the point of today where I have started my own coaching company, Left Right Diabetes Coaching.
And why? Like, why not just stay in a system where people are referred to you through the hospital system? And because you're doing, I mean, you were doing diabetes education, right? So what was the problem that you were trying to solve that you couldn't in that system versus going out on your own?
So my last job was, in my opinion, reactive. Someone comes to the hospital because they're having a stroke, a heart attack, they are having foot ulcers, and they need immediate attention. It's an acute care facility. And their diabetes, although probably was very much in the mix of what put them there in the first place, it wasn't the acute problem. So it wasn't the primary reason that they were there necessarily. And therefore, the work that I had to do at the bedside in educating these patients, although very important, and I never want to diminish that, I'm more interested in helping people proactively. I'm more interested in helping people avoid or decrease their risk of diabetes complication. And I believe that needs to be done more in the primary care space rather than the acute care space. So my hope is that I can work with patients or clients that are either maybe just diagnosed and don't know what direction to go into, or have been managing diabetes, but they just can't figure out how to lower that A1C or manage their blood sugar. So they really don't know what direction to go into. I'm hoping to help those people who are open to change or ready for change and are looking for someone to help them and walk alongside them on their diabetes journey.
And maybe let's take a step back for people who aren't either aren't aware or just know this nebulous term of diabetes. What is diabetes? What is the difference between type 1 and type 2? Yeah, maybe let's start there.
Okay. So diabetes is a chronic condition that has to do with the regulation of blood sugars in the body. And so we all have an organ called a pancreas. And our pancreas, one of the things that our pancreas does is produce insulin. And when we have diabetes, that action isn't working very well for numerous reasons. So someone who has diabetes isn't getting the insulin that they need in their body. And without insulin, the sugar that you eat or the carbohydrates that you eat just hang out in your bloodstream and they don't go into the cells where they need to go. So type 1 diabetes, which is historically known as juvenile diabetes, but it's not really called that anymore because it, although it primarily is diagnosed in childhood, it can be diagnosed throughout the lifespan. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disorder. So what that means is your body, for whatever reason, we do not know why, has decided to attack the cells of the pancreas that make insulin. So in type 1 diabetes, you really aren't making insulin anymore. So it's not that your insulin doesn't work well, it's you're actually not making it. And whereas there could be a little bit of production, you really just aren't making enough, and therefore you need to take insulin to live. If you are taking other medications, which we can talk about, then you do not have type 1 diabetes. If you know you need insulin if you have type 1 diabetes, and it is not something that you can cure at this point, at least. So that is type 1 diabetes. And then type 2 diabetes, your pancreas makes insulin, but for, again, numerous reasons, super scientific that we won't get into here, your body just isn't utilizing it very well. Sometimes called insulin resistance. But so it's there, it's circulating, it's just not doing its job great. And so that's why for those subset of the patients with diabetes, there are other medications that can help that aren't insulin. Yes, you might still be on insulin, but there are also oral medications, once a week injection medications that work on different parts of the body to help your body utilize its own insulin better. So those are the major differences between the two. Again, the profile for type 2 is it used to be mostly in adults. Unfortunately, in this day and age, we are hearing about more and more children being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes tends to be sudden onset, like you're okay one day, and then the next day it's sort of an acute sudden onset, whereas type 2 diabetes happens over years. That's where I come in. The goal is for us to not get to the point where we're diagnosed with type 2. The hope is that if we're getting our labs checked and we're going to our doctor regularly, we can start to see that our insulin isn't working great and our sugars are starting to eke up a little bit. So that's really the space that I want to get into. I want to help prevent type 2 diabetes, because you can have pre-diabetes and you can reverse that and make that go away. But once you have type 2, you can't reverse that. You can only go into remission.
So you want to be a swim instructor, not a lifeguard.
Right.
In terms of saving people, mm-hmm. right? Let's teach them how to swim ahead of time rather than waiting for them to drown.
Right, because one of the things that I learned about when I became a CDCES or a certified diabetes educator is in pre-diabetes, first of all, you can be having blood sugar regulation issues for up to like 10 years before you actually have type 2 diabetes. So there are signs that we can look for way ahead. And the longer that you have type 2 diabetes, it is a progressive chronic condition. So your cells in your pancreas start to just not make insulin anymore as well. So that really there's a lot we can do in that pre-diabetes space to try to avoid becoming a type 2, having type 2 diabetes in the first place. So to me, like, that is a really important fact that I think a lot of people get diagnosed with pre-diabetes from my experience in talking to people, and they're just like, fingers crossed, hope it doesn't happen. And there's really a lot more that we can do there. There's, you know, lifestyle management, like, you know, learning about food, learning about exercise, learning about weight loss and different strategies that we can do. And then there are medications that have, you know, studies have shown can help head off type 2 diabetes. But I think for a lot of people, it's just like, ooh, I hope it doesn't happen for me. Even when they get the diagnosis of prediabetes, or there's just not enough time in the doctor's office to get the kind of education you need to be able to be like, oh, I really should pay attention to this now before it becomes something bigger.
Yeah. And you had said it was a chronic condition, which to me says it's a lot of lifestyle and habits. So if someone gets, you know, even a word that they're pre-diabetic, you know, the things that they really need to be paying attention to are lifestyle, habits, nutrition, exercise, sleep.
Stress.
At what point, so what is pre-diabetes? Like, is there a line? Mm-hmm. And what is that? And then it sounds like that's an ideal time for people to be reaching out to you, because if it gets to the point where they're clinically diabetic, not that it's too late, because there's lots of people where they have type 2 and they can, you know, work on their A1C and whatnot. But it sounds like in an ideal world, people see or hear from a doc that they're pre-diabetic or kind of heading that way, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. in early stages, mm-hmm. and they get ahead of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that was a lot, but yeah, what's pre-diabetes or pre-diabetic? What's that mm-hmm. line, and what does that all look like?
Yeah, so the CDC estimates that there are 98 million people in the United States that have pre-diabetes, and I forget the percentage, but I think it's over 50% don't even know, because, hey, all of us don't go to the doctor every year, especially around COVID. You know, we didn't go to the doctor every year. We weren't always getting our lab work done every year. So you have all these people walking around that are having blood sugar issues, right? So their insulin is starting, they're starting to become insulin resistant. Their sugars are starting to eke up, you know, when they're eating certain things, and they don't even know it. And one of the problems with prediabetes, diabetes, or let's just say high blood sugars in general, is the most common symptom is no symptom at all. So most of the time we have no idea that our body isn't working the best way that it possibly can. So there are lab markers. So interestingly enough, the American Diabetes Association just recently changed the screening for diabetes from age 40 to age 35. So they rolled it back in the hopes of catching more and more people with prediabetes, which basically is just that in between that your body is starting to show signs of not being able to regulate its own glucose. So I'm going to use the word sugar and glucose interchangeably, but blood glucose, blood sugar, same thing. Just meaning that you have too much sugar in your bloodstream and not in the cells where it's supposed to be. We need it in our cells. You know, let's remember, we use glucose or sugar for energy. So we need it to be in our cells. insulin's whole job is to unlock the cell to get that glucose to go in there. So if our insulin isn't working well, our cells are really hungry and they're not getting enough fuel, so we're feeling tired, we're feeling exhausted, but also we have extra sugar in our bloodstream, and that's what we do not want. That's where complications come from diabetes. Extra sugar hanging out in that highway of the bloodstream and causing all kinds of havoc and making our blood not be able to go to all the places that it needs to go. So with prediabetes, there are labs. So you get what's called an A1C, a hemoglobin A1C. It's a test that's taken, you know, in a lab, you know, one of your labs, and is sent off to the lab. And if your number falls in a certain range, you're considered to have prediabetes. If you're under that range, you know, you don't have anything. And then if you're over, it's considered type 2 diabetes. So your goal of at age 35, and then if it's normal every 3 years after that, is to have your A1C checked by your doctor as part of your routine labs that you get when you go to the doctor, hopefully every year.
But it sounds like even 35 might be later than even like the population is experiencing.
Well, there are definitely risk factors to type 2 diabetes specifically. And so if you have diabetes in your family, so, you know, family genetics is a huge risk factor. If you have a history of gestational diabetes, we haven't even talked about that type of diabetes that just basically happens in pregnancy. And that is usually reversed when you have the baby. So it has to do with, you know, with what the baby and the placenta is doing in your body. But that's a huge risk. If you have gestational diabetes, you have a 50% risk of having type 2. So things that you know about yourself already, you should be like, ooh, I have to even be more careful about my blood sugars and my, you know, my glucose metabolism, race. Certain races have a higher incidence of type 2 diabetes. So there are risk factors that if you know about, you can, like you said, it's not just age, but there's also other risk factors that can make you more aware. It can be. Weight. Mm-hmm. Weight is a big one. So obesity is a risk factor for type 2 diabetes. So having an awareness of what you're looking for ahead of time, right? So it's about being proactive with our health. We don't, you know, it's easy to sit around and just be like, hope that doesn't happen to me. But if we know what we're looking for, there's a better chance we'll find it. And although finding it can be really scary, it's also power. It gives us the, hopefully, motivation and then the desire to look for the knowledge to try and figure out how do I manage it. Because it's there whether you're looking for it or not, or it could be there. So it's the more you know, right? And the more you know about your body, the healthier that we can be, right? So, and what does it mean to be healthy? It means hopefully living a long life free of other complications, other diseases, especially ones that you feel like you can prevent, and enjoying all the activities that you want to enjoy in your life.
And A1C, why? Because that's the measure of longer term blood glucose levels, instead of, you know, just an instant reading where, you know, if you have a big meal, your blood sugar is going to spike, which is normal, but it doesn't indicate, you know, the long-term kind of baseline level, which is what A1C measures. Is that right?
Yeah. So when you check your blood sugar, that's just giving you a snapshot of time. So that's giving you right that second, what is my blood sugar? And if you test your blood sugar and then 2 minutes later test your blood sugar again, it will be a different number because it's measuring that traffic in your bloodstream. It's measuring how many of those glucose molecules are hanging out in your bloodstream. And every number is going to be a different number. Okay? So we're going to get a little tiny bit sciencey here. But what the cool thing about an A1C is what it's measuring is it's measuring how much sugar is stuck to your red blood cells. So we pull out some red blood cells and we look at them under a microscope and we say, huh, this one looks like a Sour Patch Kid. It's really, really, really sugary. And this one is pure and clean. And we can therefore look and see how much sugar has been hanging out in our bloodstream for over a 3-month period. So it gives us a little bit more of a bird's eye view. The reason why it gives us 3 months is because the life of a red blood cell is 90 days. So the beautiful thing is that today you have new red blood cells and they have no sugar stuck to them because they're brand spanking new. But then you've got some old ones that are hanging out because luckily our red blood cells don't all die the same day, right? They're constantly being regenerated. So at any given moment, we're going to pull out some of those red blood cells and we're going to look at them and we're going to get an average idea as over the last 3 months, how much sugar has been hanging out in your bloodstream. So I always say you can't hide from your A1C because you can't do anything about it. Whereas you could check your blood sugar in the morning every day and it could be gorgeous. But for all you know, the rest of the day, it's going high because of the things that you're eating and the activities that you're engaging in. So it's important to check your A1C so that you can get that more bird's eye view of what my average blood sugar is over the past 3 months. And it can be a really helpful diagnostic tool to determine if you have prediabetes or diabetes. And then it can also be an important management tool to say, hey, how am I doing with managing my blood sugars? And then I can help you say, what more can I do and what are the tools and how can I get there to bring my A1C to a number that helps my body be as healthy as it can be.
If someone goes for a physical, is that standard on the blood panel that they would get?
So it should be after the age of 35. It should be, so like I said, at age 35, you get it checked. And then every 3 years after that, if it's normal and if it's abnormal, it should be every year.
And what is a, you know, what are the ranges on that? Like if someone is like, oh, wow, I just got my blood drawn and I have the paperwork here and I'm looking at my these numbers, but I don't understand what they mean. A1C is, you know, 5.5. What does that mean?
5.5, you're in the normal range. And I don't, you know, I say normal in quotations because who's really normal? But there are no evidence of diabetes under 5.7. So 5.5, great. If your A1C is 5.7 to 6.4, that is a pre-diabetes range. So that's when you want to start to think about how can I work on getting that number lower? What are the tools? What are the steps? How can I get the resources, the education that I need? And then if your A1C is 6.4 or greater, that is diagnostic for type 2 diabetes. And like I mentioned, once your body has shown that it is in the type 2 diabetes range, that is not reversible. It can go into remission, meaning you're not on medications.
Like metformin.
Right. But it is stays with you. So again, if we can eliminate that from even happening in that pre-diabetes space, or even better, if we can stay in the normal range, it's only going to help decrease the risk of the complications. And we haven't really talked about that. Like, why do we care?
That was my next question. Like, we're talking about, you know, blood sugars and even the fact that some people might have early on, well, pre-diabetes and not even know it without any symptoms. So it's like, okay, if there are no symptoms, then who cares?
Right.
So where does that road lead down to or possibly lead down to?
Right. And that's, you know, I never want to scare people, but it's important for us to understand, why do we care? Why do we care what our blood sugars, what numbers they are? Why do we care that when we eat a bagel or a very high carb meal, that our blood sugars go up super high? What does that do to our body? There are short-term complications to diabetes. So yes, I said the most common symptom is no symptom, but if you have high blood sugars frequently, you can feel tired, cranky, hungry. So there can be some short-term complications, but really what we worry about the most are the long-term complications. And that are things like stroke, heart disease, heart attacks, diabetes retinopathy, which is the leading cause of blindness, kidney issues, having kidney disease, and circulation issues, neuropathies, which is like painful toes and fingers, and then a lot of impaired healing, which often leads to amputations, not necessarily from the start, you know, having to have your whole foot removed, but it often starts with a toe and then another toe and then leads to more and more. So diabetes can cause real havoc in your body. All of that extra sugar that's in the highway system, that bloodstream that shouldn't be there, basically just does not let things circulate as well. And those tiny little blood vessels that need blood, like in the back of your eyes and your tippy-tippy toes, it's just not circulating well because that extra sugar is getting in the way. So it can just cause a lot of circulatory problems. And a lot of people who are suffering from the conditions that I talked about, like stroke, like heart attacks, like heart disease, if we go back and look at their A1C or their glucose, you know, regulation, there have been a lot of problems.
It's often a comorbidity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that the case for type 1 as well? Or not as much, because once you're on that and you're on insulin, it's managed more clearly.
So type 1 does have the same risks, because same with type 2 and type 1 are both manageable. There are medications and there are lifestyle interventions that can help you manage it to keep your blood sugars in a good range. So type 1, if you're not taking your insulin or your A1C is creeping up, you're going to have the same complications as type 2. So it's across the board for people with diabetes.
Yeah. What's the discovery of, you know, being able to inject insulin, it was huge, right? Mm-hmm. It was a game changer. So what's stopping someone from, you know, make a case for coaching, right? Versus mm-hmm. just, you know what? All right, give me my insulin dose and I'll be on my way. Like, I'm good.
Right.
Sticking this needle in me.
So there was a study that estimated that people, especially with type 1 diabetes, or I should say people who are on insulin dependent, so there are people who are type 2 who also need insulin, make up to 180 extra decisions in a day. So if you think about all the decision making that goes into everything that you eat, all the medications that you take, how to manage your blood sugar in a range, checking your blood sugar, monitoring, all the extra doctor's appointments that you might have to go to because of the extra specialists that you need. It's a lot of work. Diabetes is a lot of work and it's relentless. You never take a break from it. It goes on vacation with you. It's there with you all the time. So it's a lot of work. And there's a lot of information out there, both with type 1 and type 2. Again, whether you're insulin dependent or not, where it's helpful to have a team of people helping you. Because as much as I hear a lot that I just want to do it on my own, you can. You absolutely can. I never want anyone to feel like they can't. And I want to empower people to feel like actually they can do it on their own. But having a diabetes coach can help give you some structure, some accountability, some knowledge that you may or may not be getting from healthcare providers who, although they have that knowledge, just might not have the time and the current structure that we have with our healthcare visits. So somebody who can come in, so a health coach or a diabetes coach is someone who can come in, sort of troubleshoot, figure out where your barriers are and your pain points and help you kind of work through them together. So again, that's a health coach helps you get where you want to go. We all want to have a lower A1C. We all want to, if we're dealing with weight issues, lose weight. We all want to be healthier. I'm making that assumption that we all want that. It's just, how do we get there?
Yeah, and usually faster than trying it on your own. I mean, that's what we say at the gym. It's like, you could go to a regular gym and try to figure out all the machines that are there and figure out like what workout you're going to do. Or you could come to us and just be given a plan, aka a workout of the day, and we could help modify for you and show you how to do these things. And it just saves a lot of time and energy and headache and frustration.
Yeah. And aggravation. So as someone who is a Kana member, you know, I've been to the Globo gym and I just walk around and I look at what other people are doing and I'm like, oh, that looks like a good idea. And I'll go do the machine after them. And I just kind of feel like I don't have a purpose or a plan. And then I'll get super motivated and I'll go on TikTok and I'll go online and find myself workouts. But it's a lot of work. And it's like, well, I don't know if I could do this workout this day. Is it going to hit the same muscles as this workout the next day? So if we're equating it to exercise, working with a coach, having one-on-one individualized coaching helps you formulate a plan that that helps not only your health, but your confidence and your stress levels because you're working on a plan together. The really important thing that has been recognized more and more in the diabetes education community is the importance of there not being a one-size-fits-all program. So a lot of people want me to say, eat this, this, and this, do this workout at this time, and you will have a better A1C. And really what my job is to ask you questions. My job is to ask you questions and find out about you and find out how do you want to get there and then help you formulate a plan about that. I've worked with people who work night shift. I've worked with people who are truck drivers. I've worked with people who are stay-at-home moms. They're going to have a different eating schedule. They're going to have a different food shopping, meal prepping. They're going to have different schedules. There's not, I see a lot of things on social media being like, do this plan and you will have success. I'm a firm believer that the best plan for you is the plan that we come up with for you. There isn't one answer. And that's really hard for people because they really want it spoon-fed to them. My job is to help you create a program that works for you around your needs, your life, your specifications, your food likes, your food dislikes, is to really individualize it. And I think that's the benefit of working with a health coach or with a diabetes coach. There are services out there for people with diabetes that are insurance paid. You can get 10 hours when you're newly diagnosed, you can get 10 hours in the first year, but it's mostly group classes. And then after that, I think it's 1 hour every year. I think Medicare guidelines. So there are some resources out there, and I always want people to investigate those and see if, again, it's the right fit for them. But the benefit of myself and my company is, like Chris, like you mentioned, individualized, less hassle, less stress, and really it's going to help you get where you want to go sooner.
Yeah. Well, I think about if you go to a city in a country you've never been to, don't speak the language, you want a tour, and you also might have some like very specific interest or agenda items, right? You could do a group tour, and the tour guide there would be knowledgeable, but the problem is you're at the mercy of being in a group. And so you got to take bathroom breaks with everybody, and you got to eat with everybody, and you got to go to the main sites. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go like off script or like based on your specific agenda, it's way better to get a private tour guide. like just pay to get the tour guide to be just yours.
Right.
So to me, that's how I see you and your role. It's, yeah, like you could do a group. You could find a lot of information online, but how do you know if that's relevant to you even?
Right.
And what you're offering is like, hey, look, like I'm not going to be able to take everybody. This is not, you know, you're not Mother Teresa and like just giving away your services. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's for the people who, you know, want a customized plan and to be walked through, you know, with someone who is obviously knowledgeable and credentialed, but also empathetic.
And like to take it even a step back, you mentioned it, you could also go online. You know, plenty of people, when they go on vacation, they spend hours and hours and hours doing research on their own and finding the best place and where to stay with their dog, if they're going with their dog or whatever specifics they have, they want to do it on their own. So there's that model, right? Then there's the group tour model, or there's the private tour model. And like you said, sometimes it can be a premium. But I think that health is an important investment. And I think that we often, when we think about what we spend our money on, and what tangible things that we have in our homes, I think that our health is the number one and most important thing. And again, obviously I'm biased because I spent my life trying to help people be healthier. But the idea that you could spend time, effort, and money on your health to have better outcomes, to be healthier, to possibly lower your risk of all of these comorbidities that can cost you your life, I just think it's so important, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, and to me, again, everyone's going to have different wishes, wants, desires, but for me, quality of life matters a lot. Like, I'd rather live to be 75 but have high quality of life, mm-hmm. than live to be 100 and be, you know, have a very low quality of life or be on a machine assisted living, like whatever the case may be. Like, and maybe those things change as I get older, but you know, I think, you know, the quality of life versus the quantity,
right.
You know, for a lot of people probably matters. And that's what it seems like you're helping with, the quality. So let's say someone reaches out to you and they're like, yeah, like I need some help. Like, I just got diagnosed type 2 diabetes or even type 1, as some people might later in life get diagnosed with. What does that look like? Like, are you going to sit there and like just talk to them and just teach them things they don't know? Like, what, mm-hmm. what is that actually?
What's the process look like? So, you know, I always like to start, if someone's interested in my services or thinking about it or have a loved one that they feel like could really benefit from it, you know, the first step is just to sit down and have a phone conversation. Kind of, I'd love to see where people are at. You know, we talk a lot about different stages of change, and really the goal is just to get from one to the next. So maybe you're like just the thinking about it and you're not ready for the action stage, and that's okay. And we can kind of talk about what it would take to get you to that next stage. But just getting an idea of where you are at, because again, my goal is to meet you where you're at and then help you move along. But we have to figure that out first. So that's kind of a first step. And then working with me is a once a week check-in, hopefully in person if we're in the same area. If not, we can do it virtually. But a once a week check-in where we can go over goals, blood sugars, any education that you feel like you might need, and answer any questions that you have. Then there's also access to me throughout the week through secured text messages. So if there's questions that pop up when you're either eating certain things or seeing certain numbers, you know, blood sugars, as I often say, are like a window into your body. So the more data that we have about what's going on in your body, which is blood sugars, that's a really great place to start. So we can, over the week, talk about different blood sugars. And then, you know, moving forward, I can help with food shopping, with meal prepping, with exercise plans. So there's really all sorts of directions we can go in depending on, again, you and your needs. You know, there are a lot of tools that can help manage diabetes, and it's just kind of honing in on one at a time and kind of figuring out what works for you. And then remembering to give ourselves grace, and that behavior change, especially health behavior change, takes time and it takes a lot of trial and error. So I think a lot of it is also the accountability piece, but then, hey, I didn't hit my goal this week. Okay, why? Like, let's figure that out. Let's learn from that, because, you know, not being able to accomplish goals are just as important as being able to accomplish them as far as figuring out where to go next.
What if someone, let's say, needs help with like an insulin pump? Like, is that something that you would help with?
Yep. So insulin management, intensive insulin management, is another piece of something that I can help with. Again, I'm a registered nurse and a CDCES, so I am not replacing your healthcare provider who does all of your prescribing. And my goal is really to work in tandem with them, and be able to communicate and make sure that we're all on the same page. But when you are on insulin, adjusting your own doses is something that you learn to do. And that's something that I can help you navigate. And my goal in all of this is to get to the point where you feel so confident that you don't need my help. I'm not looking to sign people up for a year-long program, or, you know, years and years of diabetes coaching. My goal is that I help you get to the point where you feel like you can do this yourself, and give you some of the tools around strategies, tips around whether it's managing insulin, whether it's food shopping, whether it's exercising. So, and also with type 2 diabetes, managing and navigating all the different medications out there. I'm sure people are seeing more and more commercials with very, great jingles about different injectables, and they just have a lot of questions and want to understand, is this medication right for me? What about this medication? And I can walk you through every medication, what the dosing should be, can talk to you and help you before your doctor's appointments with questions that you might have for them that could be helpful. I've even gone to people's doctor's appointments for them if they're interested in that. So helping you navigate all the different medications, including, insulin, is part of what I do as a nurse, diabetes health coach, and CDCES.
What would be a message, or thing you would want people to know regardless of whether they have diabetes or not? Like, is there something that people should be focusing on, or, not necessarily changing, but, you know, paying attention to?
When it comes to, like, glucose metabolism?
If there's an area that people could pay attention to more in order to, let's say, prevent this or manage it better.
I'm a firm believer that food can be medicine. I don't know, it's hard to pinpoint one, to be honest.
Yeah, like, it's very general.
Well, yeah, when I say the food is medicine, I'm also like, ooh, but movement is really important too. Like, you know, there are so many different tools that can help you maintain your health. And it can be overwhelming because there are so many tools. You know, our food supply happens to be very processed at this time in our lives, and just a lot of sneaky ingredients that we aren't always aware of. You know, I follow a couple of accounts that talk a lot about how we don't cook as much as we used to because we're all so busy. And, you know, again, just all, what are the ingredients? What are the things that we're putting inside of our body? So food is a big portion, no pun intended, but food is a big part of our day-to-day. You know, we have to eat. And, but it's so overwhelming to know what to eat. So I do feel like if we all started paying attention to what we were putting in our bodies I think that that could go a long way to preventing a lot of the chronic health conditions that are out there. But that's not to say that getting some sort of movement in every day isn't important as well. But yeah, I think I'll go with food.
Good answer. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you? Where can they follow you? What's your website? Give all the contact
info. All the deals. Yeah. So my website is leftrightdiabetescoaching.com. And my Instagram is also leftrightdiabetescoaching. So those are probably the two best places to get in touch with me. My phone number and my email address are on my website and actually I think on my Instagram. And if you go onto my Instagram, you can see I put up some information about diabetes. So you can start looking at some of the things that we talked about today are in there, as well as some other tips and tricks around managing diabetes and just sort of trying to live your healthiest life. And then you can book a consultation online or call me or email me.
Great. Oh, and if, let's say, someone does not live locally, are they still welcome to reach out to you? Do you work only with people local to Montgomery County, or do you work with people virtually?
Yep. I actually, when I did my health coaching position a couple of years ago, it was completely virtual. I feel like between text messaging, video chatting, and phone calls, that there's still plenty of ways to communicate. And so even if you live outside the Montgomery County area, I'd be happy to meet and talk over the phone and see if we could be a good fit for each other. And then we can go forward from there. But yes, virtual is always an option.
Great. All right. Well, thanks for chatting.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
No problem.